You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the weekend. And thanks for spending a part of it here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Saturday, March 30th, the now 48-28 Rockets are just a few hours away from tipping off another meaningful game at home against the Sacramento Kings, and we'll certainly be recapping that before the weekend is done. For today's show, however, we're going to be looking back at the week that was, because it's certainly been an eventful week, starting with the MVP showdown in Milwaukee between Harden and Giannis, and the relative letdown of that loss. Fortunately, though, only 48 hours later, that was followed up by the huge shot of adrenaline that came with not just beating Denver, but annihilating the second-best team in the Western Conference. So to discuss what we learned along the way with the MVP race, playoff seeding, and a whole lot more, I'm joined today by my friend Matt Hammond. This is his first appearance at Locked On Rockets, but I'm guessing some of you may know him already because he's a veteran Houston sports radio host, and he also hosts his own show still today, appropriately titled The Matt Hammond Show, on his Twitter page, simply at Matt Hammond Show. So let's head straight to the phone lines and get Matt connected right here at Locked On Rockets. Matt, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Doing quite well. I think everyone around the Rockets is feeling a lot better after that win over Denver. And I'll start you with the MVP race because I haven't discussed it enough this week, I feel like, because there was so much hype. And then the Harden-Giannis showdown ended up being a relative non-event, I would say. James with 23, 10, and 7. Giannis with 19 and 14. It felt like it didn't really move the needle either direction. But part of the reason why I wanted to talk to you, I feel like judging by your Twitter feed at Matt Hammond Show, you share an opinion that's fairly common amongst Rockets fans, which is that it looks like you believe James Harden should win it, but you have a healthy degree of skepticism that he actually will. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it was me, I would give it to Harden. Like, just thinking about the things that I care about, if I'm a fan, if I'm a GM, anybody who's got a vested interest in a basketball team, okay, well, I want a dynamic ball handler, check. I want a guy who can score, distribute, and oh, by the way, play defense, check. I want a guy who can carry the team if need be, check. And just put on a show. I mean, everything that James Harden's done this season, from carrying the team when Chris Paul and Clint Capella were hurt, I'm sure you know this better than anybody, but before the streak started, the Rockets were 12-14, and they had the second worst record in the Western Conference.
Yep.
They're about to have the third best record in the Western Conference because they're about to pass Portland. I mean, if you just look, James Harden had four stat lines in a single game that we had never seen this season. He's had more games of 50-plus points than 25 or fewer. Like, we could go on and on and on with, you know, the stats and the history, and not to mention just the show. Like, people will say that, you know, he doesn't really put on an aesthetically pleasing style of basketball. It's not that fun to watch. I mean, I don't know about you, but I like life hacks. I mean, I like apps on my iPhone that make my life easier. James Harden's figured out a way to make his life easier and the lives of the Rockets easier on the basketball floor with his efficiency. And the Wall Street Journal just had a really good piece on the work that he and Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey have all done together. But the point is, like, James Harden's MVP candidacy, to me, it is everything that I care about if I'm a fan, want the team to win, or if I'm a GM and I'm trying to build a winning team. The problem that I have, it's not even the people who think that Giannis should win, because you can make a real case for Giannis as the MVP. He's the best player on the best team. He's the best defensive player on the best defensive team. By the way, the first guy to put up 27, 12, and 6 since Oscar Robertson. Like, nobody's saying that Giannis isn't great, but if he ends up winning the MVP, it's going to be a classic example of you made the right decision for the wrong reason, if you believe it's the right decision. And the reason he would end up winning the MVP is voters need new. Like, we have seen this countless times throughout NBA history where in 2013, LeBron should have been the MVP, but okay, LeBron's already had enough MVPs. Let's give it to Kevin Durant. What about 2010? a title. I believe at that point he already had four MVPs and two titles in 2013. But in 2010, he had just made the decision. He had just left for Miami from Cleveland. Voters were over it. I mean, we've seen them do this with Michael. We even saw them do this with Hakeem, where you can make an argument that the year that David Robinson won the MVP, that was Hakeem's better year. And David Robinson ends up winning the MVP because the vote, they need new. I mean, this is one of those things that, like, we need the Apple Watch because it's a new gadget. We need Hinge because it's the new dating app. People get bored. They need new. So the thing that bugs me, it's not even the people who are making the argument for Giannis. It's just that they're making a really bad argument. And what it is deep down, if they're being intellectually honest, is that there's just, you know, Harden won last year. It's a close race. And so tie goes to the guy who hasn't won it yet.
So let me ask you a different question that's related, which is, is there anything that can happen over the final 10 days or so of the season to change it? Because my thoughts on this Harden-Giannis debate, I'm with you in that you actually can make a very valid case for Giannis, especially with what he does defensively. This is not the Harden-Westbrook debate from 2 years ago, in which Harden was clearly the superior player and there was just a fixation on round numbers. No, Giannis is really good, and even though I think Harden has been a bit better, I would respect it a lot more than what happened in the Westbrook debate. However, one parallel that I hope comes into play, the Harden-Westbrook debate from 2 years ago, I really think, Matt, that if that were held, the vote, a month before the season ended, Harden wins it. I think Westbrook won it not just because of the round numbers, but because the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season, the final parting shot on the voters' mind, he went crazy. He had like the 50-point triple-double in Denver, I think, when he had a walk-off 35-footer that won it at the gun. In my opinion, the fact that Westbrook finished so strong and Harden that season, the Rockets were locked into the 3 seed, so they were kind of resting. He was also banged up. Not a lot to play for. To me, getting the last word really mattered. So I'm right there with you in that the needing a shiny new toy dynamic may play to Giannis. However, we know that Giannis, the Bucks are almost locked into the 1 seed. Now he's got the ankle injury. Is there something that Harden can do? And maybe it started with the 38 he had against the Nuggets over the final couple of weeks that would give him a shot to actually edge Giannis out.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at the schedule, the two things that could help James Harden end up winning the MVP, it would be if he had, you know, some kind of signature moment. Not that he hasn't had one already, but like as a parting shot. Mm-hmm. You got some games coming up against, you got two against Sacramento, one against the Knicks, I mean, one against Phoenix. Those are, you know, pretty good opportunities to, you know, I don't know if those teams are bottom dwellers per se, but like you want to mop up on somebody, that's a good spot to do it. And then, oh, by the way, season finale on the road, Oklahoma City. If James Harden lit up the Oklahoma City Thunder, and oh, by the way, Russell Westbrook, I think that would really pop as kind of a parting shot for the season. But I also think, I don't know that I really want James Harden going for the MVP. Like, we've
understandable.
Seen the Golden State Warriors, for instance, they might tell you, hey, we didn't care about the record. I mean, it was really about the championship. Well, when they went for 73 wins, like, they burned out in the NBA Finals. Part of that was Draymond Green's suspension. Part of that is I just think that they were gassed. And I think if we're being honest with ourselves, listen, man, the workload that James Harden has taken on this season, like, it's not sustainable. I'm not saying that he can't have a great and productive postseason run, but, like, you're betting against biology. I mean, even last in the NBA playoffs, LeBron had this remarkable run where we were all like, okay, when's the bill coming, right? Like he's playing all these minutes, he's scoring all these points, he's doing everything for the Cavs. At what point does he hit a wall? That was over the course of, say, like 20 games. What James Harden's been doing has been over the course of like 60 or 70. I know the playoff seeding's important, and, you know, I wouldn't be – if Daryl Morey wants to finagle playoff matchups by, okay, we'll win this game, but we'll tank this game, I got no issue with that. But we kind of need to be honest about this, that James Harden, who is athletic but not in, you know, like endurance is kind of a thing. You know, he's not really that twitchy. Again, like if you bring up James Harden's physical gifts, like people on Twitter get pissy. I'm not I don't say that to take a shot at Harden, but like – physically, he's not LeBron, he's not Westbrook, like he's not built like that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at these next six games in the regular season, I'm trying to get James Harden geared up for a playoff run.
Transitioning to the team itself, which we alluded to at the end of our segment one about James Harden, this our normal three-point show. Today I'm joined by Matt Hammond, veteran Houston sports radio guy, host the Matt Hammond Show on Twitter, which you can find at his Twitter page, at Matt Hammond Show. About the team, the playoff run to come. Look, the Rockets, as we're recording this midday Saturday, they're a game back of the Blazers in the loss column for the three seed. However, the Blazers, they don't have Yusuf Nurkic. They still don't have C.J. McCollum. So I think the odds are good if the Rockets keep winning. They can get that number three seed, even though they don't have the tiebreaker with the Blazers if it's a two-team scenario. I do still largely think it's within the Rockets' control. Of course, who knows? We'll see what happens when they play the Kings tonight, et cetera, et cetera. The Blazers also have a big one at Detroit, so the math might change a bit by Sunday or Monday. That said, one thing that's clear, whether the Rockets are the three or the four, you're not going to face the Warriors and you're not going to face the Nuggets in round one, because in some combination, and now the Warriors losing to Minnesota last night, that drops them back into a tie with Denver for the one spot. So the point is, regardless of what order those two are in, you're not going to be playing them in the 4-5 or the 3-6. You're going to be playing some combination of the Jazz, the Clippers, the Thunder, or the Spurs. So Matt, your take, in terms of the teams you can conceivably play in round one, who do you most want to play? Who do you least want to play?
So when you first posed this question, I think the Texans guy in me was saying, give me a meaningful playoff series win. Like, I know that at this point, the Rockets have been to the Western Conference Finals twice in the James Harden era. They've become the closest team, really, in the history of Golden State's dynasty to taking them out in a seven-game series. Like, I understand the big picture, but there is a part of you that, like, when the Texans have only beaten teams in the NFL playoffs that are either the Bengals or back quarterbacks by a backup, there's a part of you that's like, hey, give me the Jazz, a team that's always given the Rockets trouble. Or even, you know, the Clippers are playing really good basketball. The Spurs, it's a Greg Popovich team. Like, there is a part of you that, like, hey, give me a meaningful playoff series win. But that being said, there is a bigger picture. The Rockets do have a legit chance to take out the Warriors this year. They had a legit chance to take out the Warriors last year. Like, there's a bigger picture here. Give me the easiest path possible. And right now, that's the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, I understand that, you know, Russell Westbrook, sometimes he cools off and he's more of a distributor. He kind of lets Paul George do his thing. And we talk about MVPs. I mean, Paul George was an MVP candidate for most of the season before, you know, James Harden and Giannis really created some distance. But we all know what happens with Russell Westbrook in a big spot, whether it's a primetime game or the NBA playoffs. He just has this itch where, you know, he can't help himself. I mean, he just starts jacking shots. He will shoot teams out of games. I mean, if you're looking for a playoff series that you could you could get in and out of it pretty quick, four or five games, Twitter's not going to like this, but the answer is Russell Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder. So, you know, I don't know if right now they're the eighth seed. I don't know if that's, you know, realistic or likely that Oklahoma would. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. They're two games back of the Jazz, and you know, maybe if the Rockets end up at the four, and somehow the Jazz, you know, they lose a couple of games. I don't know if it's likely, but my vested interest, if I'm a Rockets fan or if I'm Daryl Morey, is hey, just give me the path of least resistance to get me to the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Right now, that's Russell Westbrook.
I think that's an interesting take, because the Thunder, they intimidate a lot of people with the star power, and I've fallen into this trap at times this year, Westbrook, Paul George, but now you head down the stretch of the year, Paul George has not been the same guy dealing with that shoulder injury, and you also bring up an interesting dynamic with Russell Westbrook, what he tends to do in spotlight games, especially when it's late. So it's one of those, at first blush, I would actually say I least want to play Oklahoma City, but then when you look at the data and you look at the playoff history, yeah, you make a pretty compelling case that even if at first glance you say, wow, that team is pretty daunting, and I do still worry a little bit about how they match up with Houston because they're pretty physical up front. Steven Adams and the Rockets rebounding has been their biggest defensive weakness all year. But yeah, you make a point that when you look at the actual data and then you combine that with the Westbrook playoff history, it's not as scary as it might first appear.
No, and if you just look at the personnel, like, the fact that the Thunder are where the Thunder are and the Rockets are where the Rockets are, it's a complete indictment of Russell Westbrook. Like, you could really make, and I realize the audience here, I mean, it's Houston sports fans, it's Rockets fans, but you can make an argument that just the personnel, the Thunder have better players. I mean, again, Russell Westbrook, one of the most gifted basketball players literally that we've ever seen. Paul George, MVP candidate. You know, Steven Adams, just really, really good big at a time where, you know, the league has kind of gone finesse. Like, that's a nice counterpunch, right? Well, the problem is that, like, Russell Westbrook's the quarterback. He's running the show. If your quarterback's erratic and he's all over the place and he's uneven, it doesn't really matter what the rest of the roster's like. He's going to blow it. I mean, you know, Cam Newton, you know, one game he's great, next game he's awful. You bring in North Turner and it's still not working. Like, you know, Russell Westbrook is kind of, even if you bring up the perception of the Thunder, like, man, that's a really good roster. No, it is a really good roster, but it doesn't matter because they still have Russell Westbrook. And I mean, he's a nuclear reactor, like a lot of power and, you know, everything's working right, but he melts down. So, you know, yeah, if I'm James Harden, Daryl Morey and the Rockets, like, give me Russell Westbrook and the Thunder.
The team I most want to play, and I want to get your take on this, I look at, in each team, you know, they present their own challenges. I'm a little wary of the Clippers, even though their differential is the worst of anyone in the Western Conference. The fact is, Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, all the former Rockets, you know good and well that team would treat every game of that series like their Super Bowl. To me, the team that I most want to play is San Antonio, just because I think if you can't take away plan A for the Rockets, which is James Harden, and if you look at Harden's numbers against the Spurs this year, obviously he had 61 a week ago. If you can't stop plan A, and they have no one that can really guard James Harden one-on-one, they also don't really have a rim protector. LaMarcus Aldridge in his 30s certainly is not that guy. They also don't take a lot of threes, so they really don't have that much in terms of variance. The long mid-range shots, it's kind of hard to beat the Rockets that way. I know the history of D'Antoni and Popovich. Pop is great, all that kind of stuff. But to me, San Antonio seems like the most friendly matchup, just because I have no idea, barring injury, how that team beats Houston 4 times out of 7. Is that fair? Where are you at?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that I'd be shocked if a Spurs team with, yes, Greg Popovich, but, you know, I mean, like DeMar DeRozan. I mean, these are not, you know, these are not your older brothers, San Antonio Spurs. Like, I don't see the Spurs beating the Rockets. And as a matter of fact, I mean, if we thought game 6 a couple of years ago was bad, if you lose a first round playoff matchup against the Spurs,
yeah,
like, that's, I'm not saying somebody needs to lose their job, but like, that's the feeling that you have walking away from that game. The thing that concerns me about the Spurs is that I could see them stealing a couple of games simply because of coaching.
Okay.
I love Mike D'Antoni. I mean, if you want to get into like a piping hot Mike D'Antoni take later on in the show, we can do that. I love Mike D'Antoni. It's not so much a criticism of Mike D'Antoni, but Greg Popovich coach teams, they execute. And we can be honest about this, that at times, late game situation, inbound, final shot, the Rockets have had issues with executing late. I understand why they do it. A lot of it's that, you know, James Harden takes on such a load because he has to, not because he wants to. He takes on such a load that, like, at the end of games, I mean, he's tired, right? So I understand why things tend to happen that way. But yeah, like, in a playoff series, if, you know, we've seen this the last 3 or 4 years in the NBA playoffs, if a team hits their threes on a night that another team has a bad night of shooting, the game at minimum will be close. If it's close, I don't want a Greg Popovich coach team stealing a couple of games and robbing the Rockets of rest that, you know, remember, big picture, could be the difference in a Western Conference Finals matchup with the Warriors, simply because that's just how well they execute down the stretch. So yeah, I mean, really, man, give me Russell Westbrook, give me the Thunder.
And remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Matt, my next question for you as we wrap up our show, before we transition to a few summer items in the event that the Rockets don't win the title this year, I want to look at beyond the first round this year. We spent segment 2 discussing largely Rockets versus Thunder, Spurs, also touched on the Jazz and the Clippers possibilities. Those are the 4. Some team amongst those is who the Rockets are going to play in round 1 in all likelihood. As far as beyond that, really, there's two pathways. You could be on the side of the bracket with Denver in the 2-3, most likely. And Denver's a team, of course, the Rockets feel pretty good about since they've beaten them 3 or 4 times, including the blowout on Thursday evening of this week. However, it's also possible you could be on the 1-4 with Golden State, or perhaps, who knows, maybe Denver somehow, even with a tougher schedule, ends up taking the one from Golden State, who seems to be playing uninspired ball of late. The crux of the issue to me, when it comes to where you want to be, it's not so much about the Nuggets, because even though I think, you know, certainly you feel good about that matchup, Capella, Jokic has no idea what to do with him. At the same time, you know, if you're on the same side of the bracket as the Warriors, okay, well, if you beat the Warriors in the second round, then you have a Denver team, most likely in the Western Conference Finals, that you feel pretty good about. So it's not like that advantage goes away. To me, the crux of the issue is, do you want Golden State earlier or later? And I've seen some arguing, you know, citing the Chris Paul injury last year, that you want them earlier. Personally, I want them later because you never know. Maybe they get beaten earlier. That's certainly not impossible, but more likely, I just think because Golden State is the more talented team, that any attrition, any wearing down that happens over the first two rounds of the playoffs, that's good for you as a Houston team that doesn't have as much overall talent. So to me, that's why I want to defer Golden State, be on the opposite side of the bracket, play them in the Western Conference Finals rather than earlier. What's your thought on that scenario?
Yeah, and not that you have any control over it, but right. If we're making the bet, that's the bet that you want to make. And neither of them are great, right? Like, you can make the argument that, yes, Chris Paul broke down last year. I mean, who's to say that he doesn't break down again this year? By the way, Clint Capella missed significant time. James Harden, we just mentioned the load that he's carried basically the entire regular season. That's the load that LeBron carried, and even he burned out, you know, over the course of just a postseason run. It's not a great bet to say, hey, give me the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. But that being said, you do hope that where attrition, something happens where, you know, we're not rooting for injuries, but like, if Steph Curry wants to roll an ankle in a non-career threatening way, great. If something happens with Kevin Durant, great. Draymond Green, you know, gets mad and takes a swing at Steve Kerr, great. I think the concern that you have is that the Warriors are clearly bored. I mean, a lot of the people that you see posting pictures on Instagram every day, getting into pissing matches on Twitter and, you know, gossip, they're really people that are bored. All this stuff that we're seeing with the Golden State Warriors, I mean, this is, you know, year 4 of the dynasty. Like, it's, you know, a lot of it is just plain old-fashioned boredom. There is a risk in seeing the Warriors later in that, okay, well, when the playoffs start to roll around, it's game on, and now you're getting them 10, 15, 20 games into it, we're like, they're humming. But that being said, I mean, realistically, your only shot of beating the Warriors is if one of two things happen. Either one of them suffers an injury, or just quite frankly, you don't miss 27 straight threes in a row. Like, I think people fixating on the Chris Paul injury, like, yeah, Chris Paul, he suffers injuries, and he suffered an injury there, but like, even if that happened, you know, he got you in a really good position, set you up for a game 6 and 7 in the Western Conference Finals. If you make just like 2 of 27 threes in a row that you miss, you're in the NBA Finals, you probably win a championship. So, I mean, I still think that like, that's ultimately the bet that you need to make, that, you know, it's a long season, Western Conference Finals, it's a bigger stage. You know, a lot of people think that James Harden isn't a gamer. I disagree with that. Chris Paul, we know that he's a gamer. Give me the bigger stage, and, you know, this is the reason that you're an NBA fan, an NFL fan, a Major League Baseball fan. You want to see what happens when it matters the most.
Final question for you, and there'll be two parts to this one. As far as what happens this summer for Daryl Morey, and you can put your GM hat on here, if they beat Golden State, if they win the title, it's pretty obvious. They're going to run it back. If you win a title, they're not going to do anything radically different. If they don't, I think there are two possibilities, really two tracks that they're going to be working on this summer. First, the one-year guys they've got this year that have been difference makers, Daniel House, Austin Rivers, Kenneth Fareed. You don't have bird rights on any of those guys because they're one-year contracts. So really, you're only going to be able to keep, most likely, one of those guys. Maybe you get lucky, somebody falls through the cracks and you keep for the minimum. But I think the odds are you're only going to be able to keep one. So first, I want to get your take on what your priority list is. To me, I think Fareed has clearly become a secondary priority. As far as House and Rivers, I know the tendency is to say House. I actually think it's a little closer than most think because Rivers provides them such unique on-ball defense. If he can shoot the way he did the last 2 years, 37% and 38% from three, and keep in mind he's only 26 years old, I believe, I don't know that the gap between him and House is that large. I'm not saying clearly I'd go Rivers. I just think it's more of a debate, and so I want to get your take on that. The other thing, and it's a slightly bigger picture, is that if they don't win it all this year, what is the trade possibility that Daryl Morey is looking at? Because you know if they don't win it all, of course they're going to try to keep one of those guys with a mid-level exception, but I highly doubt Daryl Morey is going into the offseason just saying, well, we're going to keep one of these guys, run it back, and hope that 2020 is going to have a different result than 2019. You know, at least in his mind, he's going to be thinking about something he can do to get a bigger ticket upgrade to this team, most likely via trade. So as we close out, your thoughts on first, the House Rivers Fareed dynamic, and then secondly, anything bigger that Daryl Morey might be working on.
Man, well, I'm looking ahead to question number two, and I words can't express how much respect I've always had for Daryl Morey, because, you know, when we look at the Texans offseason, for instance, it's pretty clear what they got to do. They got to fix the O-line. They got to get some cornerback help, right? Like, It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that, hey, maybe you should give Donald Penn a call. Hey, maybe you should trade up in the first round of the NFL draft to get either Andre Dillard or Cody Ford, right? Like, you and I, regular guys, we can kind of figure that out.
Yeah.
Daryl Morey, his entire career, has been in nearly an impossible situation where it's like, you've got to get a team that didn't tank like the Sixers and didn't have the Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett trade like the Celtics to stockpile assets. It wasn't, by the way, tanking like the Lakers were. I mean, people say that, you know, they were just too beholden to their history and, you know, Kobe Bryant. No, they gave Kobe that contract in part so they could tank. Like, for a team that isn't as well positioned as a lot of other teams facing an impossible challenge of trying to build a team that, you know, can beat a life hack Golden State Warriors, or even not the Warriors, LeBron, like, seemingly impossible tasks year in, year out, and he makes it happen. Like, I mean, you know, this is Jeff Bezos, Amazon acquiring Whole Foods, and then the Washington Post, and then, like just seemingly out of nowhere. So I respect the hell out of him for that. We can get to that in just a couple of seconds, but yeah, I mean, I had to fanboy out for a second to Daryl Morey. So I think first and foremost, their priorities insofar as House Rivers and Fareed, I think it's, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if it's so much these individual players as much as it is those types of players. Because when I look at House, okay, that's a really good shooter, right? Like, he has given you, you know, every shooter's streaky, but for the most part, he has given you really solid shooting from the perimeter. Okay, well, that's one of the things that you need to beat the Golden State Warriors. And then Kenneth Fareed, I mean, he's nasty, he's physical, post you up, get in on the boards. Golden State Warriors don't really like that. You know, I'm not about to call Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson, Draymond Green soft, but by traditional NBA standards, they're kind of soft. So if you're looking for a counterpunch, it's guys like Kenneth Fareed, PJ Tucker, physical. So, you know, nothing against Austin Rivers, and I think that a lot of the reason that, you know, he's perceived as the way that he is, it's just, you know, he was on the Clippers and, you know, dad was the coach and, you know, he's not blameless in the way that he's perceived, but I think a lot of that, I agree with you. I think he's been a better player and people give him credit for. But yeah, you need shooters and you need guys who are physical until something happens and, you know, Kevin Durant goes to the Knicks or Kevin Durant, you know, he and Kyrie Irving, you know, get all up in their fields and, you know, start a whatever, an R&B band. I don't know. But yeah, so first and foremost, House and Fareed, but more importantly, players like House and Fareed. And then, yeah, I guess for the second question, I mean, I would just default back to, like, what do you do? I mean, if you're Daryl Morey, you got James Harden. Great. You pulled off one of the most spectacular trades in the history of the NBA. No exaggeration. You got James Harden. But at the same time, okay, you're doing the Dwight Howard thing. That didn't really work out. All right, so we're moving on from that. And now we get Chris Paul, which we needed, right? Because we want to, we want to innovate. We want to, you know, sort of re-engineer the wheel. We'll have two elite point guards and we'll elevate our bench. And all 48 minutes, if, you know, we kind of stagger Chris Paul and James Harden's minutes, right? But now you got to pay Chris Paul as part of the, you know, you got to be good to players too. So now you got to pay Chris Paul a bunch of money. And now you're locked into that salary. And Chris Paul has been, I mean, there were times this season he looked washed. But he's bounced back. And, you know, that's good. But he ain't getting any younger. And he's making, like, all of the dollars. I don't know what he does. Like, I, despite being a guy and despite having an ego, I'm totally okay saying I don't know. And here's the thing. I think ask Daryl, I think he'd be the first to admit, I don't know what to do either.
I think that too. Yep.
You know, so like it's, yeah, man, like a lot of times in sports, the path is really clear. Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, Deshaun Watson, you know, they needed to get offensive lines. Andrew Luck's got them. The other two don't. I mean, you know, the Astros, I think we can all admit that heading into the season, you know, we feel pretty good about their number three, number four, number five pitchers, like insofar as, you know, you can feel good about a three, four, five pitcher, but like maybe they could use some pitching help. It's pretty clear to figure out like what the issue is and what the most sensible fix is. I honest to God, if the Rockets don't win a championship this year, I don't know what Daryl Morey does. And that's kind of been his entire tenure as a Rockets general manager. I think it's why, if you were asking me, I think he's the best GM in the NBA. There's not a close second, and I think he's one of the best general managers in all of professional sports.
Good stuff. Folks, he's Matt Hammond. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Hammond Show, where you can find the aforementioned, the Matt Hammond Show. Actually, Matt, before we go, tell people your story, because you left Houston for Philly, and now you found your way back to Texas. So tell people what you're doing these days, and I mean, I already said it to a degree, but where they can find your show and listen to you on, I mean, you cover everything, the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, but just tell people a little bit about yourself and what's been going on for you the past few months.
I mean, do you want me to just plug my Twitter handle, or do you want to get into the Matt Hammond Show story? Because I think we might need another podcast for the second question, but yeah, no, I mean, yeah, like I came to Houston in 2014. I'd been doing radio first in Philly, then Atlantic City, then New York. I got hired to come to Houston, spent a bunch of time in Houston doing radio. I launched the Periscope show as kind of a way to, I thought I deserved a show, and if no one was going to give it to me, I was going to create my own show. Not a whole lot different than a lot of people who, you know, tech startups and companies. So I bet on myself. It ended up going well. My former boss in Philly somehow came across that, mentioned something to the guy who is his afternoon show host, who incidentally I interned under and worked under when I was in Philly the first time. And then, yeah, the rest was kind of history. I ended up, you know, I mean, I don't know if you're, I don't know how deep your listeners want me to get here, but yeah, I mean, I ended up, you know, I was there in Philly doing radio. I loved it. I loved the city. I loved the people. I loved everybody I was working with. I think that for the most part, feeling is mutual. But yeah, I mean, you know, especially in, I'm not about to call myself an artist, but especially in a discipline where you spend a lot of time inside your own head, like you've got to make it all work, life, work, radio, free time, hobbies. You've got to be able to put all the pieces together to really make it sustainable and frankly make it good. And I just couldn't fit all the pieces together. So from there, it was like, all right, well, I got to make a change. Ended up getting out of radio, somehow got into tech sales, which I am the proud seller of enterprise level software somehow, some way. And yeah, I mean, the Periscope show, like, you know, I'd kind of gotten away from it for a little bit. I wanted to decompress and you know, take up some other hobbies and some other interests, you know, guitar. Austin's got a great music scene. And then I just started tweeting about the Texans, and then you see people like it, and then you see people retweet it. And I'm not one of these people who thinks that, like, Twitter is everything, but I mean, with the exception of the James Harden beard take, like, it's usually pretty good. It's usually pretty good stuff. And so, you know, it started with a couple of tweets here and there. Then it started with more tweets. Then it started with, okay, I'm going to actually cover the team from my iPhone. Then it started with people telling me, hey, you should do the show again. So I was like, all right. And it kind of just, you know, it kind of just evolved from there. Like, I have in the past been accused of being a little bit of a Frank Underwood, and, you know, I've got all these different plots. I think, you know what I've got? I've got ADD. So it sure is helping that. But yeah, I mean, you know, I guess at the risk of making this a TED talk, like, one of the things I've found is that, you know, there's no planning life and careers, and like, you kind of just fall into stuff.
Yep.
And you make the best of the situation that you're in. The situation that I have put myself in, found myself in, am ultimately in, is me doing a fake radio show every day from my apartment at 7 p.m. And, you know, on Fridays we have an old fashioned when we're doing it. So that's, yeah, it's kind of the story. And hopefully that wasn't too long winded, but yeah, it's kind of the story.
No, I'm sure people will appreciate it. Of course, you talk about the Rockets there a decent bit. So I encourage our listeners here at Locked On Rockets to check out your show as well. Matt, thanks so much for the time, and I look forward to having you again, buddy.
Yeah, man, appreciate you. Have a good weekend.
Good stuff there with Matt Hammond. Now, it's about 12:30. We're only a little over 4 hours away from a Rockets game, which starts a little early tonight at 5 p.m. against the Kings. So we'll break it because we're not too far away from having another episode recapping that game as well. So with the episode complete, this is where I'll throw out a few plugs. If you would be kind enough to support this show, certainly Twitter, you can follow me on there at Ben Dubose or the show at Locked On Rockets. But also if you'd give us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, those are all ways that you can support and help continue to grow this program. Also, if you've got questions for me, suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. That's the best way to get in touch with me, or you can also use the message features on the aforementioned Twitter and Facebook. As far as checking out our prior shows, you can do so at LockedOnRockets.com, but also you can subscribe to the show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, you can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets. All of those are ways you can access our prior content and see what we've been doing over what's really been a busy and successful second half of the year for the Rockets. At this point, they've now won 15 of their last 18 games heading into Saturday's game against the Kings. Houston now a season best 20 games over 500 at 48-28. So for today, Saturday, March 30th, this is where we'll break it. As always, thanks for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily commentary on Houston Rockets basketball.